Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wherever you are. This is Terry Brown from Sedona and introducing the Wind Free Monday Night Show. Wind is out rounding up the conference line. What we have is the simulcast where people are on the telephone line and people are on VBS radio. So he rounds up people from all over the world on the conference line, and then they are on that line, and then the other people tune into VBS radio. So he should be on in just a minute with the conference people. So today is the 26th of September 2011. That's wonderful to be able to get in touch with all of you. I never know what the topic's going to be because he doesn't tell me beforehand, and that's my request, because if he tells me beforehand, I'll get nervous, and then I'll worry about it. So I never know beforehand. And then after it's over, I pretend I didn't do it. So I don't know what the topic will be tonight, but he usually has some really interesting topics. And if you want to hear what the topics were from the previous times, we're Monday night at 6 on VBS Radio, and they have an archive section. You can go to their archive section and sign up for that for a small amount of money, and then you can check and hear the audios every week. We go back several years of doing this. In fact, he had another show before that that he did, which was called The Don and Wind Show, and I don't know if that's still up on their archives or not. What I do, I'm kind of the co-host of the show, and sometimes he has me do channeling. Sometimes Carla Ruckert comes in. And she used to be on once a month. However, she had some back surgery, and so she's been out for a while that's healing. We hope to have her back. She's the one that did the raw channeling in the 80s. I believe it started in 1981, and she channeled a series of very beautiful books on the raw information. She was working with a man named Elkins on that, and then after Elkins passed over, she didn't channel the raw group anymore. He was really a good ground for that. She channels a section of the raw group called Quo, however, and she has a website up where a person can go and read those channelings. She's also on the audios in the archives of VBS Radio. I learned to channel in 1995. I knew Wynn at the time, but I couldn't get him the least bit interested. He would take me to the channeling sessions that I had with Cheryl Taylor, and he would drop me off, and I'd say, "Hey, you'd really love this. The channeling is going to start in just as soon as I walk in the door." And he'd say, "No, no," and he would leave. I'd ride home with somebody else. So there was a course as part of that. I went every week, and there was a course in how to channel. So I did my first channeling in that course, and it was an amazing experience because so much love came through. What we were channeling was the Council of Light, and so much love came through that I just, all I could do was sit and cry, because it was really amazing. And The channel that taught me was Cheryl Taylor. She was a police psychic. She solved cases. She'd worked for the FBI and the CIA. And she would find lost submarines and give the coordinates. And she was totally amazing. She could find lost items. One day, Robert Nielsen, who was in the course with us, dropped his cane over the balcony into the flower garden, and we were looking everywhere for it. We couldn't find it. And we were all down in the flower garden, pushing the flowers aside and looking, and she came out on the balcony and said, "That's the wrong way to look for it." And she put her hand to her head for a few seconds, and then she came over and she pointed to a certain place in the flower garden and said, "There it is." And we looked, and there it was. And one day, my mother had given me some beads, lapis lazuli, and I put them somewhere, and then my mother was doing a jewelry show, and she wanted them back. So I couldn't find them, so I asked Cheryl. Cheryl said, "They're at the bottom of a box in your room." So I looked in the bottom of all the boxes in my room, and there it was. So she did an amazing series of channelings every week, 2004 through 2006. She's not doing it at this time, however. And so there's all these channelings. I have some of her transcripts, but I would dearly love to get them all. Lynn, are you on the line yet? So he's not here yet. I'm still out rounding up the conference call people. The way Lynn finally got interested in channeling was in about year 2001, he had a new girlfriend, and that new girlfriend began bringing through messages and channeling, and they were really, really astounding channeling, some of them. It was like part of a sci-fi movie, even to just listen to them. So he was living with her, and he had a channeling one night, and he invited me over so I could at least see what they were doing, because he suspected she was going to leave him. And so I went over, and I got a chance to ask questions. I asked questions like, "What is it like to be you?" And she was channeling the Elohim. And it was a fascinating evening. Then I asked, one of the questions I asked was, "Can I channel the Elohim?" And they said, "Yes, it depends upon my intention." And they said it would be possible. So then after she left, I went over to visit Lynn, and I could feel them putting pressure on my head and knocking on my head, like knock, knock, knock. And so I realized that by the frequencies, I'm very sensitive to frequencies, that it was the Elohim. And so I opened myself up, and they said, "Could they speak to Lynn?" And I said, "Lynn's sleeping. Maybe you could talk to me, and then we can get acquainted with each other and get to know each other." And they said, "No, you want to talk to Lynn." So I woke Lynn up and told him to get the tape recorder out. And so he did, and he began asking questions. And so I gave the answers that they gave me. And so then that started a whole series of question and answer periods, or sessions that we went through, and he taped them all, and then he put a large amount of them in the book, Questions and Answers with the Elohim. Wynn has a, he's taken courses in physics at Berkeley, and I have a physics degree from Lewis and Clark in Portland, Oregon. I have a master's degree in library science, which is interesting because I was a librarian for a while for Tektronics, which is a large exporter of oscilloscopes. They started in Oregon, and I lived in Oregon at the time. Wynn, are you on yet?
Yeah, we're just listening to you. Good work.
Ladies and gentlemen, Wynn Free.
Huh?
Ladies and gentlemen, Wynn Free.
Great. And I think we have the conference line on, too. Are you guys there?
Yes. You sound pretty bass. Low sound to the mic.
I don't sound right?
It's kind of, well,
muffled.
Dark sound.
Is that better?
It's good. It's good.
No, if it's not, tell me something.
Yesterday's was great.
Is this better right now?
Yes.
That's better. Okay, so I'll work on this. Okay. So Terry is telling me, you know, when we're trying to impress people, we tell them how I was a physics major in Berkeley, okay? But what we really don't put out is Wynn's biggest education came when he was hitchhiking around the country with no money, with his guitar and his astrology books, and was having miracles every day of synchronicity. And that impacted me more than anything else in my life, because up to that point, I was reading about these kinds of things. And you know,
recording yet, right?
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, thank you.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. This conference is being recorded.
All right. This is September 26th, Monday. This is our BBS conference call, and Terry was just announcing. She comes on, and she starts kind of giving an introduction while I'm...
All callers are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
While I'm gathering up the conference call. And it's a simulcast between a conference call and BBS. And the reason we do it that way is because, first of all, we started as a conference call. And what I learned was that even though you're listening and there's either me talking or Terry talking, we are creating, and this is something you have to experience by just checking in with us enough times, we are creating a group matrix. And some of you that are listening, even though we've never met, we've never come into our conference calls, you're listening, you find yourself being part of it, feeling connected to it. And there's an energy. And so you're becoming part of the group matrix. But for a long time, that didn't occur. I couldn't feel it. So the conference call was an anchor for holding the energy, because how do I describe this? When you hear channeling, which we do on this call, the something called channeling, some people call it, Daphne likes to call it transmissions. When you do channeling, it seems like there's this strange voice coming through somebody, and who knows where it's coming from? You wonder where it's coming from. Who are they? How can you trust them? And channeling has a myriad of possibilities. When somebody's bringing through an intelligence, a voice from another dimension, it could be from a departed soul that's communicating through someone. And that's fairly close in. It could be from a more advanced departed soul that has a lot of wisdom to share. It could be from what some people call ascended masters. I'm not so sure. I would say, in my experience, to be careful about ascended masters, because anyone can say anything. If I call somebody up, I could say, hi, this is the IRS. I could say, hi, this is David Letterman. And especially if I sounded like him or them, how would the person know? So when a stranger is talking to you, you have to kind of make sure they are who they say they are. And I mean, if it's the IRS, it's fairly easy to call them back and say, you just call me.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
That's probably after a four-hour wait to get them on the phone. But nonetheless, there's ways of confirming it. And, of course, if somebody calls you and says, we're the local so-and-so, and can you give us your credit card number? If you're smart, you won't give it to them because you have no idea they're who they say they are. And there's a lot of scams that go on that find tricky ways to give you your credit card. So when you're talking to a voice that comes through somebody, it's up to you, it's up to me, it's up to us to figure out who they are and to test them and check them and not to believe it, no matter what they say their name is. And, of course, in our case, it started out with a voice that said they were the Elohim. And when I looked up the word Elohim, I found things like the creator God of the physical universe, the name for God in the Old Testament, the name the Mormons use for God. So then I had a lot of conversations with them about that. Can you explain this, and how do you work? And they really said the way that humans interpreted God was not exactly correct, and that they were a group energy, and they were a spin-off from what they call the one infinite creator. So they were the first group energy, and in many cases throughout our history, they have done interventions, and because they have the ability to rearrange matrices, because they have the ability in their realm to move energy around, things could happen down here that looked like miracles that to them were just commonplace. And, of course, at the beginning of all this, for me, there were quite a few miracles. And even now there's people that come into these calls and miracles happen. And what's a miracle? A miracle is when something happens that can't happen within the laws of physical reality, like when they did a healing on my sister. But the laws of physical reality are not the laws of universe reality. And the way physical reality works, it's a solidification of all of many dimensional frequencies where it solidifies in the physical, but it starts in the non-physical. So if there's a way to shift something in the non-physical, in the invisible realms, and start a process, that can go from all those realms into this realm so that something shifts in this realm. And suddenly somebody says, that couldn't have happened. That was a miracle. And that was happening to me when I was hitchhiking and doing astrology charts. And things were shifting Like, I'll give you an example. An example of one of the things is, now I was really, really living at that time close, how, what's the word here? With very little structure and very close to the moment. And there was a time when I was sitting on a, I was sitting on a stoop in Greenwich Village in New York, and all these people were walking by. And I forget what I said, but somehow I had my astrology books, and I'd say, would you like a reading? And I pulled the astrology book out, and I'd look them up, and I'd give them a mini reading. And I had gotten fairly good at it, fairly astute at it at the time. Well, somebody came by who was born on May 28th. And May 28th had a particular connection to my astrology chart. It was 6 degrees of Gemini, and it related to my rising sign, which was 6 degrees of Gemini. So I had learned that when somebody was born May 28th, I felt an energy, and I started to identify that energy. Now, that was blowing my mind in of itself, because what happened was, about 10 minutes later, another woman walked by that stoop in Greenwich Village, and I called her over, and I said, excuse me, you're not a Gemini, are you? And she said, yes. And I said, May 28th? And she gasped and said, oh, my God, how did you know that? Well, I could never explain it to her. For the next 3 days, there was something going on astrologically, which I don't know. I didn't pay attention to what was going on. But I was getting all these May 28ths going by me, and every time they would go by, I could feel the energy and stop them and say, you're May 28th. I remember in that period, I was walking down. I had a friend who was a jazz piano player, Burton Green, and he had done some recordings. And we were walking down some bustling New York street with Burton and his girlfriend, Elizabeth, and it was a crowded street. And I looked over, and there was this young woman with her mother. And that energy went through me, and I looked at her. I picked her out of the crowd and said, you're not a Gemini, are you? And she said, oh, my God. And I said, May 28th? And I remember her mother grabbing her hand and pulling her down the street like she just saw the devil. And I can understand. A stranger stops you and picks your birthday. They would never understand. You know, it looks like magic. And but I was sensitive to the energy of that birthday. And I had a string of people who were coming on that birthday. And one of the things that I kept noticing is because I was such a street person and I was meeting all these people and doing astrology charts and asking everyone their sign, I started to notice that every day, every couple of days, I would have a propensity to meet people of the same signs, and sometimes the same birthday, but the same signs. And it would change, though. It would be like 3 days, it would be this, 2 days, it would be that, then it would shift to this. Now, I didn't really do the investigation of why it was changing, but I knew enough to say that it's got to be changing. I was trying to figure out, remember, I was a physics major, and this, what I was doing couldn't happen by the laws of physics. A guy's on the street picking out strangers and picking their birthdays out. And, I mean, I wouldn't have thought of myself as psychic. I didn't say they say I was psychic. I just said that connected to my chart, and I could feel the connection, and boom, I was right a real lot of the time. So what happens is, the way that works is each of us is a radiation of our astrology. It's kind of, we have an imprint of the universe in our DNA. This is my way I figured this out. And so we're radiating certain vibrations. And there's, if you study astrology, you'll find that different things interact. So, for example, if you look in the love astrology stuff, you find, say, for example, a Cancer and a Pisces can tend to get along because they have a good astrological aspect. And it's a geometrical aspect. And then Cancer and a Capricorn might not get along. And they have another geometrical aspect that was inharmonious, or I think a Taurus and a Leo. And when people don't get along easily, they actually can get along, but the way it was described when I read the astrology books is an inharmonious aspect forces you to rise above your astrology. And I didn't really understand that at the time. But I do now. If you notice, when we call in the light, I build all this stuff into it because we're coming in way above the planets in the solar system. So we're moving in above astrology, through astrology, and into this realm. But it doesn't invalidate astrology any more than it invalidates your body, because it's all part of everything. And in Earth, we're impacted by all those energies of the planets. It impacts our DNA. So we're a transmitter. Everyone's a transmitter. At the same time, we're in the transmission of the universe, which is a transmitter, a huge transmitter, and the main antenna. And then everything else could be like a repeater station, if you follow. So the universe is a main antenna. We're picking up all the vibrations of the universe. It's going through our birth time, which locked in our DNA at that moment. We're repeating everything. We're responding to what's coming in, and we're in this huge energetic flow that is a big mishmash. And when you let go of enough grounding, and I'm not suggesting people do this, but I did it because I wanted to know how things worked. When you let go of enough grounding, you start to flow in those higher spaces. And if, by letting go of grounding, it was hitchhiking. So there was no grounding. I was living on people's couches. And I was just, I was having this happen on a daily basis. And I couldn't even talk to people about it. Nobody understood. It was like, this can't be, you know. I thought, wow, I made this great discovery. The universe works like this. And then I tried to put it in my music and songs. But that's not our topic for today. That's a side show. But we're bringing those energies into these calls, I believe. We're bringing the energies from beyond astrology, beyond everything. And here I was, a physics major, and very skeptical. Sometime I'll have Jillian, who was my first girlfriend in college, who was a bohemian artist that was into Edgar Cayce, and I thought she was the biggest nutcase around. I'll have her as a guest on the show. And if I can talk her into it, we're still good friends, believe it or not. After she got mad at me for leaving her, going on the road hitchhiking and having girlfriends everywhere, we're still friends. Some aspects of this show is like the X Zone, and certain lines of questions are like science fiction, because as you who were on a couple of weeks ago and heard our preamble, we had a line of questioning on how humans were created. Now, oftentimes, I read things, I cross-reference things, I had, you know, read some of this, and I kind of had an idea where to go with it, but I didn't know where they would go. And we get information that has never been brought into the public before. So I tell people, don't believe this. Consider it, see how it resonates, and listen to our shows. And if it sounds strange and weird, just think of it like the X Zone and go along with it. And at some point, all these little things might go click, and you'll get it. Because the thing about this far-out information is it hits our mind, and it seems just incredulous. But many of us, if not all of us, have had many, many past lifetimes, and some of us were there at these events. Some of us might have been on the spaceships that landed to mine gold. It's the story. There were spaceships that were mining gold, and the people on the spaceship they're called Anunnaki in history, and they were Elohim who had descended into this realm. Elohim were just energy forms, and that they were the creators of this realm. But once they descended into this realm, usually they wouldn't, not all the time, they wouldn't know who they were or that they were Elohim. They would just grow up in some kind of home life, and of course they would be indoctrinated to the society of the time, but they were more powerful than most of the other people. They had more abilities. They were advanced, but they didn't know why. They just found themselves here. And so there were groups of Elohim, descended Elohim souls that were called the Anunnaki. And then they get hooked into reincarnation, and they come back for many, many, many lifetimes. And each lifetime is like a new white slate. Now, the only way people can figure this out is, I believe, you have to come across somebody that channels, who's able to bring in voices, and if you get the right information, it starts to prove itself. It starts to create cellular resonances. And you have to test it, because like I said, because there's a voice coming through, you don't know who it is. And if somebody asks you for a credit card, it's going to take a long time testing them out. So when people are listening to us, I say over and over again, test us out. Test it, test it, test it. But don't dismiss it too quickly, because you may be missing a great opportunity in your own evolution, because that seems to be what happens is when people really do make the connection, they have a propulsion in their growth, in their evolution, in their awareness, in their spiritual awareness, in their ability to expand beyond the illusions of this realm. And that doesn't come from believing what we say. It's more subtle than that, and it's more deep than that. Believing something just creates a new belief pattern, and even if everything we say is true and all you do is believe it, you are now just, you know, you may as well believe in communism, socialism, Christianity. If it's in your head, it's just a belief. Somehow, it's got to go from beyond a belief to an experience, to something that shifts you, that changes you, makes you grow, makes you more loving, makes you more aware. And if it doesn't do that, and you know, if you're looking at things that are just beliefs, then they can be interesting, but don't stop looking, because if you stop and you just have a belief pattern, you'll stop growing, because something that's going to make you grow goes far beyond belief. So on that note, we have the story of these descended Elohim, who were gold miners, who decided to engineer a being to be their slave to mine gold. So there was a cross of DNA between them and apes, and we ended up with the first humans. And after a period of time, the humans became a little bit rebellious. And the Elohim were far more powerful than the human, more power psychically, obviously technologically, and they would try to set themselves up as gods. And so the humans would obey them and tell them if they did this, they would get punished. And the humans got, now I don't know how long and how many lifetimes and how many thousands of years this took, we didn't go into that. But after a certain period, the humans got hard to manage. And they looked at these Anunnaki as they're living the life of luxury, coming in and going in their spaceships, and the humans were working away in the mines, and this is something that was never heard before anywhere. They decided to take over a spaceship and go take it for a ride, and so... I hope I'm getting this straight. I think they took over the spaceship, and when they tried to start it, they didn't know how to fly it, so it blew up. And so the Anunnaki said, this is not working. These guys are too rebellious. They just blew up our spaceship. Maybe they killed some of the Anunnaki when they blew up. I think we have to back up and get rid of these guys and start over. There was also an indication that there was a planetary code of non-intervention in the local evolution of a planet. And apparently in engineering these humans, the Anunnaki broke that code. And so there were two brothers. One of them wanted to get rid of all the humans, and the other one, whose semen was part of the genetic makeup of the new beings, had an affection for them and wanted to grow them into God realization. Of course, that's not something that's going to happen in one lifetime. So the two brothers were in conflict. And the brother that wanted to get rid of all the humans ended up nuking the Sinai Peninsula and perhaps other places. And the brother that wanted to save the humans was guiding Noah, I hope I'm getting this right, Noah to build an ark and put enough humans and animals in there so the genetic codes would be not destroyed and it could continue. Now, that's what I remember from our talk 2 weeks ago. And some of the backup for this, as far as it sounds, is there is a Jewish scholar, Hebrew scholar, Zachariah Sitchin, who was, I think it's called an archaeologist, he was going into the caves of Sumeria. Sumeria is the oldest culture on the planet that we have records of. And, of course, it's not there anymore, but there were caves with writings. And Zachariah Sitchin would be going into these caves and learn how to translate the writings. And he recorded this whole story of these two brothers, Enki and Enlil, and wrote a number of books about it. You can look him up on Google. I'm sure you'll find loads and loads of information. Essentially, he told the same story about Anunnaki's ETs landing on Earth and engineering humans for the purpose of being their slaves. And if you go through ancient history, remember in the Bible it talks about chariots coming from heaven? Well, probably those chariots that are coming from heaven, guess what, were spaceships, flying saucers. And the inhabitants of the planet thought that they were their gods. So when we read in the Bible that the sons of gods, sons of God, mated with the daughters of man, we're actually probably reading about the Anunnaki having relationships with humans. And when we read that humans were created in the image of God, we might be reading that they created humans. We looked like them. Now, it gets far more complicated. I mean, we have some questions about this. It's like, how do different races get developed? Where were the Chinese? Where did they come from? How did all these wanderers come in? And how did the bodies change from Chinese to Japanese to Aborigines to Eskimos to Indians? And we'll ask some of those things tonight. Of course, I'm talking a long time, as usual, but I am setting the stage so everybody knows where we're going to be going with this conversation. And again, I am not telling anyone to believe anything that comes up. And you're welcome to think of it like the X-Files. And it's like, let it sink in and see if it makes sense. It does fit in. I mean, when you start to study the Bible and you read about chariots, the fiery chariots from the sky, and the gods coming down, and the sons of God mated with the daughters of man, what did that mean? And we wonder about Noah and the devastation. It's like so many of these things cross-reference so well with the Bible, okay? And I should say, as in case anyone's listening, the Elohim and the Ra, who we talk to the best of our knowledge, don't have bodies. They're pure energy sources at very high level of density, and they have the ability to project energy into this realm. And, you know, they told me that when I first asked them, well, what do you guys do? They said, we can project love light into your realm. And I didn't know exactly what they meant by that. And over time, I learned that when I would give talks, there would be all this energy in the room, and they said that was them. So that's one way to distinguish really high sources from lower sources. Lower sources can't ever, in my knowledge, do that. They can't project energy into a room. I won't say that's absolutely true, but probably, I think in one question I said it's very rare that that can occur. Okay? Higher sources can project energy. We do this on our Sunday calls. If you haven't attended one of our Sunday grid healings, you have to check this out. Higher sources can project energy all over the planet. It doesn't matter where you are. When you're on that call, people feel the energy. Now, if you're going to be a skeptic, you can say, well, maybe he's suggesting this, maybe there's this. You can think all those things, but check it out and see, because I've tested it. And it's hard to explain what it feels like until you experience what it feels like to feel the energy of the higher realms coming through the top of your head and through your body. And where does that come from? And then Terry starts channeling, and they say, "We're glad to be here." That's us that you're feeling. So you have to watch this over and over again, and then people come to our calls and come back, and something miraculous happens. Something shifts in their life. Somebody heals. They heal. They transform. And it doesn't happen for everybody. And it doesn't happen, how can I say it? I'm kind of getting the feel of who it can happen for and why. I mean, it can happen with everybody, but I think one of the reasons it doesn't happen is because there's a predisposition for a human not to let go. They're holding on. And these kinds of things happen when there's a letting go, when there's a flowing. And this is the trust. It's like jumping off a cliff and knowing that you're going to be okay. So shut up, Wynn. Terry, are you ready? Terry? Calling Terry?
I had to turn my mute off.
Oh, my God. I thought you had a PhD, and I think you just have a bachelor's. In university, of course.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. You're unmuted.
Okay.
All right, well, we have this little ritual. This is our only ritual, which is calling in as a light. And it's a ritual if you do it and there's not energy behind it. And it's an invocation, an intention, that actually creates what you're saying if there's energy behind it. So I do my best to always put energy behind it, my own high intention. So let's go with it. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person here. And any negativity be taken to the highest. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe, through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the energies of all the planets, through the sun, through the outer energy fields of the earth, coming in through the top of our heads, through our bodies, through our feet, and grounded into the center of the earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. What are we saying? We're joining our energies in other dimensions. All of us expand. We're touching each other's energies. Voluntary. So if you're checking us out, it doesn't have to happen. Just listen with your mind. And we invite those sources to join with us. Remember, this is all happening in invisible levels. So the only way you know it's happening is you're one of those people that's clairvoyant and see energies in other realms, which some people have reported to me that they actually do see those things, and they say, "Who are all those beings?" I don't see them, but I do feel a shift in energy when they come in. So we invite them to come in, connect with us, and create. And we want only beings that are operating out of the highest good of all concerned and honoring the law of one. What does it mean to honor the law of one? It means that everything is part of you. There's only one energy in the universe. And when you honor the law of one, when you are truly honoring the law of one, you can't hurt another, because hurting another would be hurting yourself. Just say intentionally hurt another. So, if we have beings that are honoring the law of one, they're here to be of service to us. And we create a protected space that only the positive has access to. And anything out of that nature must leave now. And do we have our sources present?
Yes, this is Ron. And this is the 26th of September, 2011. And we greet you in the love light of one infinite creator.
Thank you. Do you have any comments or additional clarifications concerning the preamble I gave to this talk this evening?
There have been a number of stops and starts in the populating of Earth. Recorded history. And sometimes companies such as coal miners have discovered some of these previous civilizations. For instance, a coal miner once discovered a gold chain in some coal. Other miners discovered a very smooth, beautiful wall that had been totally embedded in a coal. There were civilizations at 450 million years ago, civilizations at 750 million years ago, and it, for some reason, has been the history of Earth that these civilizations have gotten to a certain level and then have been destroyed. Much as when you look at Easter Island and you see Easter Island had flourished and then suddenly the people had disappeared. So, Earth is a particular biosphere with many kinds of plants and animals and bacteria and microorganisms. It takes a particular genetic coding for individuals to be able to survive on planet Earth. Civilization was wiped out at various intervals. 75 million years ago, civilization was wiped out. And before that, they had a civilization much like ours, with an army and a navy and a marines and the various parts of Earth were governed and had various types of people. 75 million years ago, the populations were much like ours. Seven hundred and fifty million years ago, the population were more like a cross between the Indians and the Chinese. There have been various times when there have been spaceports established. As you can surmise by various landing fields in South America, where the patterns in the ground can only be deciphered by looking at them from high up. The individuals on planet Earth 65 million years ago were mainly non-human. There were the dinosaurs and various animal life. Humans came in with the gold miners. In South Africa in particular, to mine gold. And humans, the Anunnaki, did not survive well in the atmosphere. And so they developed genetically a group that would be able to survive the rigors of the Earth's biosphere and would be harmonious with the biological system here in the Earth plane. At some point, the miners, perhaps 400,000 years ago, it was the beginning of a very small outpost. And the miners had much like a little town with a little restaurant and trucks that would transport the gold to a space station way point. The flying saucers would then land, pick up the load of gold, and transport it to other points where it was then used in manufacturing to make gold trinkets or to be used in commercial enterprises. It was a big trading commodity. It was at this point that the humans, a group of humans, decided that they would overtake the spaceship and would fly it and would then, once on board, be able to see what was out there. The individuals that took over the spaceship, some were on board, but the others took over the crew that were specifically housed to release the spaceship from its moorings and use the codes at each of the anchor points that held the spaceship down to release it synchronistically at the same time so that it would then be able to rev up, and then be able to move subsequently into other dimensions and become invisible in the third dimension. They did not understand the process, and the spaceship simply blew up. This was the end of gold mining until the Anunnaki, in their history books, could have a plan later on in the thousands of years ago, 20,000, 23,000, to again develop a crew that would come to Earth. They, as there are now, are very curious, as scientists are now, about how to do genetic engineering. And they were able to engineer the human by mixing the ape and the human, the Anunnaki, and experimenting through many failed experiences. They came up with a creature, a humanoid, that was able to withstand the rigors of Earth and put time to work in the mines and set time to their own gene pool. Meanwhile, other explorations of other races were coming to Earth to start outposts. Some were able to survive the rigors of Earth, and they were particularly called to see which gene patterns within them would be able to survive on Earth. And then they would land and they would start outposts. Some were unsuccessful, but different races from different planets came. And then also there were individual groups who needed to start a new life, and they would come. Subsequently, their genes would change as they were in the planet sphere. The Chinese developed the further slant eyes to help against weather and sand of some of the desert areas. Individuals in Africa developed more with dark skin. That was not so sensitive to the climate and could help them survive better. More
in question. A question.
Yes.
Like, for example, the slanty-eyed Chinese and the dark skins from Africa. Was this development as a result of environmental evolution? Was it the result of other planetary DNA continuing to mix in with humans? or was it the result of specific genetic manipulations to help the bodies match the environments?
The answer would be all three answers. The individuals that came into the Chinese area were from an area that had dark hair and were similar to the Chinese characteristics. However, in living in that environment, it was farther accentuated within the environment. The individuals that came into Africa, the same thing, and the Scandinavians, the same thing, that the environment is more favorable to certain characteristics within the human, and they were the ones that would have the characteristics more developed. Those are the ones that would survive the best, and so that was what the result was, to accentuate certain characteristics within that environment. And that was a result of the individuals living in the area and changing to more fit the environment. However, individuals that came there came with characteristics that best fitted the life in the environment, because the other groups that tried to survive there did not do as well.
Thank you. As far as the Anunnaki are concerned, I mean, it sounds like this has been going on for I'm trying to remember the dates now. It started a long time ago, and then it didn't work, and I assume when it didn't work, that means all life was destroyed. And then it started again, and all life was destroyed. And then it started again, and maybe three or four times, most recently, you know, in the tens of thousands of years ago, and it stuck, okay? Now, asking questions about the Anunnaki, how long was their lifespan? Did they reincarnate and continue this over millions of years, the same beings? And were they advanced enough to remember their past lives in this continuation?
There are several questions here. They're late.
Okay. Should I ask them one at a time? Or?
No. Their lifespan was longer than the typical lifespan here on Earth today. It was 98 years, approximately. Of course, that did not account for accidents in the transport or spaceship travel. As the Anunnaki are a more adventurous group and would tend to move into situations of where they would, in their risky behavior, have a short lifespan. They Could you repeat the next question?
The next question was, did they incarnate in similar ways that we've learned how incarnation works, reincarnation? And because they were fairly advanced, that they carry memories of their previous lifetimes into the future.
Some of them carried memories, however, the majority of them did not carry lifetimes, but were born into families, much as people are born into families here on Earth. And although their life was more adventurous and they were able to travel via space travel, they did not generally remember their past lives, as they also, in coming into the third density, would take on aspects of the veil, which would cloud their previous memory.
What planet or planets were their origins?
They spread out throughout the galaxy and into other galaxies. They were adventurers, and they wanted to see the galaxy, to see the universe, so they spread out. There were encampments, or there were towns where they would take hold on various planets upon the space route that they could, in their adventures on the spaceships, they could take hold. There is another planet that was their main planet that is in a different dimension, which they generally populated.
And if we can know this, if it's okay to know this, where are they now?
They still operate on the space routes. There are space jockeys. There, some of them have settled on various planets. Some of them are on Earth and have forgotten their lineage. They have really spread out. Their home planet has settled down more, and there are many living there. And as their boys grow up, some of them elect to become part of the spaceship fleet. Some of them elect to become part of the merchant travelers. And others tend to run shops and raise food for people.
And if we were looking at them in general, what would we might say is a division of service to self and service to others of that particular group?
We see two divisions. There is a group that are working service to others that are 51% approximately service to others. There are other groups within them that are 58% service to others. And then there is a minority that is service to self with 28%, 25%. It depends upon the degree of service to self. If you take it on a sliding scale, moving down to a few that are violently service to self, it would only be approximately 2%.
I see. And, you know, we talked about the two brothers, the Enlil and the Enki brothers that got into this conflict. I would assume that event was the one that happened in the most recent of the Anunnaki gold mining episodes. 20,000, I think you said, roughly 20,000 BC. Is that accurate?
There was in approximately in that area of time when the history of Earth changed as Enlil and the others in his camp wished to annihilate all the space platforms to stop space travel here and to get rid of the fledgling humans as the eternal edict came down from above that was all right to annihilate them, that it was all right to stop the flow of individuals within the human range, that it was a failure to mix the Earth Ape lineage with the Anunnaki lineage, and it deserved not to proceed, but they wished a higher, more intelligent lineage that they envisioned to be developed.
Thank you. I think I'll ask one more question. I can tell that Terry's being a real trooper. This has been going a long time now. So we'll finish with this question, and then we can pick up this string at some future time. And the question is, there's two cultures that we've read about that we believe are true. One was Atlantis, and one was the continent of Mu, that have been talked about in our challenge. The beings in these two continents, were they derivative of the Anunnaki? And what was the Anunnaki's relationship, if any, to these beings?
They were had a mixture of the Anunnaki and this civilization was wiped out in the weapons of war and natural disasters.
But were the Atlanteans and the Muans created, genetically engineered derivatively from Anunnaki at a previous time?
Give us a moment. There was another source that came in was another source from another star system that makes the Anunnaki was somewhat involved, but not as much as the influence of another group.
Thank you. Okay, that will close our line of questions for tonight. And if you have closing comments for us, we'll stand by.
We send a light to each and every one on the line and are there for you and appreciate this connection. And we are a family. All it takes is to open the awareness to sense the vibrations, the higher vibrations of love that resonate around you. We love you and we leave, but we do not leave. Adonai.
Thank you. And all of you listening, all of you listening on the replays, thank you so much for being here and holding the space that we can do this. We couldn't do this if you weren't holding the space. And you can acknowledge yourself. And we will see some of you on our Wednesday call, however that turns out, and on our Sunday call. And thank Gary and Suzanne and all the people volunteering. And we thank Daphne for getting this all started. I think she's on the line. Thank you if you're listening. We'll see you next time.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
Well, even thanks, Seth. Thanks, PBS. I'm done. And I unmuted everybody, so if you happen to say goodbye, we hear you.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Terry, Wynn, everyone.
You're welcome.
You stop conference recording. Your conference recording has stopped.
Much love to everybody.